We also have the Ways and Means Subcommittee of Transportation here to join us. And today we're going to hear from the Department of Transportation. Bruce, if you would. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman. You have to sit next to Senator Weston.
And I have a request as well. We just want to start this off in a spirit of bipartisanship, fairness, and friendliness, but over the decades now, Senator Carter and I, have never sat next to one another, and we don't want to establish a precedent here. Could you address this critical issue before we begin?
That would mean one of us might have to sit
by. I think you two look fine together.
There, now you're not next to her anymore.
Is there any other critical issues we have?
Critical issues. I'd like to say that Senator Morris has never looked better.
He's full of it today.
I think we're ready, Bruce.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of both committees. Thank you. It is a pleasure to be here this afternoon to give you a very quick overview of the Department of Transportation, but obviously also have the opportunity to talk to you and answer any questions you might have about the department in general. So what I'm going to do first off is give you that general department overview. And then I wanted to make it clear that Chris Warner from the governor's office and I were then going to give you a briefing on Senate Bill 71, the Connect Oregon Senate Bill that would create the multimodal agenda for transportation for Oregon, and also to advise the committee that I understand I listened in and to the various issues that you wanted to talk about, and I wanted to make it clear that we have worked with your administrator and we'll be coming back to have a much further in-depth discussion on the Oregon Transportation Investment Act, OTIA 1, 2, and 3. And again, there was a great deal of interest in terms of job creation, the amount of work getting out the contractors. And then the final thing is we'll come back and give you a further update on our innovative public-private partnership program, which I think you read about in the Oregonian a couple days ago. So with that, I'll proceed with the overview, if I could, Mr. Chair. Move ahead with the overview? Okay. I think in front of you, you have a PowerPoint presentation, which I will not read, but I will go over very quickly. It's entitled Department Overview and dated today, and I'm going to go to the first page behind the cover sheet, which I just wanted to remind the committee of the Oregon Department of Transportation's mission, and that is, I will read this, to provide a safe, efficient transportation system that supports economic opportunity and livable communities for Oregonians. And I guess I would underscore the word safe. That's something you'll find out as a common message throughout the department in terms of our commitment to safety. The word system, in terms of transportation system, I want to make it clear that it's more than just a highway department. This is a department of transportation that we're trying to deal with the other modes and make sure that we have a viable and strong transportation system that offers choice and options for folks to get around themselves or to get their goods and services moved. And economic opportunity, that's what I heard from this committee in last session and from the legislature as a whole, is our department is about economic development, creating jobs through our construction projects, but also providing the needed infrastructure that will position Oregon for the future and assure economic competitiveness for us here on the West Coast. And then finally, livable communities, the things that I really would like you to understand is we in the department are committed to work with communities and with individuals to ensure that our projects and programs are done in a way that's consistent and within the context of the natural and built environment. And we're trying more and more to make sure that our projects fit into the desires and needs of the communities, because that's what Oregon is all about and why we treasure this state. If I could turn to the next page, this is very quickly just a quick organizational chart for the department, outlined for it says for the 2003-2005 biennium, but it also is the same for this biennium. And you can see that the department is one of the largest state agencies, the full-time equivalent employees of not quite 4,600 employees. You can see that we have a number of operating divisions as well as support organizations to make this organization work. work. And I wanted to also call your attention to the footnote at the bottom of this page. If you didn't realize this, for budgetary purposes, the Board of Maritime Pilots is also part of the department's budget, and that is the folks who actually get on the ships to make sure that they can come across the bar at the mouth of the Columbia River, and then obviously up the river up to the Portland and other ports beyond. So when you see our budget, you'll understand that that is part of our overall budget. On page 3, I think you all know this, but I wanted to remind you that the Oregon Transportation Commission, we call it the OTC, is a 5-member volunteer board that's appointed by the governor and then confirmed, obviously, by the Senate. They serve 4-year terms, and as you can see, their role is to really to develop and maintain a state transportation policy and a comprehensive long-range plan for multimodal transportation system. Again, those words I think are very important. And then also goes on to say that they need to coordinate and administer the work of all of the operating modes that we're responsible for. So this is their general charge. On the next page, on page 4, this is the members, current members of the Oregon Transportation Commission. Our chair is Stuart Foster, who's an attorney from the Medford area, somebody who's been on our commission now for not quite 8 years. Gail Achterman, also an attorney and on staff of Oregon State University, has been on the commission for about 4 years. Mike Nelson is one of our newer members. He's been on board not quite 2 years, I believe. He's a real estate, owns a real estate firm in Baker City. Randy Pape, a business owner from the owner and chief executive of the Pape Group out of Eugene. He's also been on the commission now about 4 years. And then our newest member is Janice Wilson out of Portland, who is a retired bank executive and also currently involved as a member of the Portland Development Commission. So she has an extensive development background and finance background. In turning on to the next page, what I wanted to do in this section is just outline for you the various operating divisions of the Oregon Department of Transportation, and I'm going to ask the administrator of that particular division to stand up there in the room behind me, I hope. If they aren't, I'll be surprised. But the first one, I want to stress to you is one of the highest priorities for the department, and that's our transportation safety program, and that is a separate division that is run by Troy Costales. Troy, back there, in the very back. Troy, I want to let you know, is one of those folks that is a master of making sure, measuring our performance to make sure that we're doing what we say we're going to do with the money and that they actually produce results. He's also a master of making sure we get all the money that we can from various sources for highway traffic safety. As you can see in this overview, we view that we're a partner with other agencies and other organizations to deliver traffic safety. We call them 4 E's, and the E's are engineering, which is the folks who design and construct the roadways. Enforcement, as you can see, we partner a lot with Oregon State Police and other law enforcement agencies. We have the education side, where we try to, again, educate folks to essentially drive more safely, like the Click It or Ticket campaign. You've seen those billboards encouraging folks to fasten their seatbelts. Also, education in terms of driver education for teenagers when they get their first license. And then the final other E that we work with is emergency service providers, because those folks are critical to protecting, saving lives and eliminating deaths and the accidents if we can get to them quickly. You can see that our major efforts do include seatbelt safety, dealing with intoxicated drivers, speeding, young drivers, and motorcycle safety. I do want to say that our fatalities are down 13% this year. The number of people who were killed on Oregon's highways and roads last year, right now the count, and it's going to, until we'll have a final count here in a few days, it's about 445 people. That is very good when you look at our record compared to other states around the nation, and it's because of some of the efforts of folks like Troy. But I do want to stress to you that 443 people a year being killed on our highways and roads in Oregon is unacceptable to me, and we need to drive that number down. Just to put it into perspective, that means every 10 years, a community like Coquille or Eagle Point is essentially eliminated off the map if you look at all of the size of the population. And I serve on national committees, so this will continue to be a focus of my organization to continue to try to reduce the numbers of fatalities and injuries on our highways and roads. Turning to the next page, our rail division, the administrator of the rail division is Kelly Taylor. Kelly's back there. There she is. I think you all know Kelly from her work over here working with you on driver and motor vehicle services. I agree. This is an organization that does, part of the organization that does highway and railroad grade crossing safety programs. We actually administer and make decisions about where to put money to improve and provide signalization and improvements on rail crossings. We do also, which I don't think all of you know, manage the passenger rail operations and coordinate our partnership with the state of Washington in providing the Amtrak trains that go up and down the I-5 corridor three times a day. And I think as you get into the budget, obviously the operational subsidy for two of those trains is an issue that continues to be of concern to the legislature and to us. And we're pleased that that is in the governor's recommended budget because we think that's a critical a piece of choice for folks trying to get it back and forth in that I-5 corridor. The other thing I would say about rail is we also recognize in the department that rail service is critical to many of the rural communities, and especially those who rely on natural resource-based type of an economy. And because those are economically, we can haul large and heavy amounts of goods on those trains that we can't get on readily onto trucks. And so one of Kelly's jobs is to make sure that rail service continues to be provided out there to those rural communities. Chair Gilman, I understand there's some questions going on down in Klamath Falls right now about the railroad looking at pulling out of a section of rail line, which could affect a couple shippers in your area. So we're going to be monitoring that very, very closely and make sure that we can do what we can to make sure that doesn't happen. The next operating area, which I think everyone in this room has probably dealt with, is our Driver and Motor Vehicle Services Division. And Lorna Youngs is the administrator of that division. This is an organization where what I would say is most people's first experience with state government is through DMV. And the reason I believe that's important is because I want to make sure that experience is a pleasurable one and people feel good about the state of Oregon when they go to DMV offices. I want to congratulate Lorna and her staff because they do a marvelous job in providing service to the public. She and her staff continually monitor wait times, monitor the time it takes to get various transactions done, and do point of sale type customer service surveys as well as customer service surveys after the fact. And I would submit to you that the latest numbers we see is between 85% to 90% of the customers who deal with DMV believe that service is either good or excellent. So we're very proud of that, and they work hard at that because we want that first experience with Oregon to be a positive one. And we should be providing that level of service in those facilities. Turning on to page 8, the next operating division is our public transit division. The administrator of that division is Martin Loring, and Martin, I think, is there in the room also. This is an organization that does not provide direct service to the citizens in terms of transit, but rather we provide grant assistance to local and regional governments and to nonprofit organizations like senior centers and the like to provide transportation services. We do provide financial and technical support and help the small cities and those rural transit districts. And one of the main focuses on making sure elderly and disabled transportation services are provided statewide. And the legislature has been very helpful in providing cigarette tax revenues to help fund a large portion of that program. And Martin's group also is responsible for making sure we have intercity passenger service and as you know, been struggling a bit with the pullout of Greyhound from a number of routes. We're looking at options and what we can do to incent other private sector folks to step up and deal with some of those routes. But this is public transit is an area that is of importance to both the rural and urban areas of the state of Oregon. It was, if you do surveys out there, we found out that the number of people in any community, whether it's a highly urbanized area or a very rural area, the percentage of folks that are unable to drive or don't have an option is about the same. So we know in Lake County it's as big a problem as it is in Multnomah County in terms of the relative percentage of the folks who need other modes of transportation to get around and deal with their daily needs. The next page is our Motor Carrier Transportation Division. I hope Greg Delpati is in the room. He is. Greg is the administrator of this division. And this is the division that does the work that weighs the commercial vehicles. When you go up and down I-5, as an example, which you probably do on a regular basis, you'll see the weigh stations there, where essentially we, again, check their compliance for weight. Also get the information so that we can collect the weight mile taxes, his folks are the ones that go around and do the audits and make sure that this portion of the economy is paying their fair share of revenues to the Highway Trust Fund. Another area that he does is really focusing on truck and driver safety. In other words, we check trucks periodically. We also work with the Oregon State Police to do safety inspections on those trucks to make sure that they are safe to be on the road, and if they're not, they're taken off the roadway, put out of service. And we also, again, examine the credentials, making sure that the drivers are working within their hours of operation and are not out there too long on the roadway. And Greg, I want to also recognize Greg and his staff, because they have done a marvelous job of measuring the performance of their organization, looking at various metrics, in a way that really is looking at the bottom line in terms of truck at fault accidents and, again, the injuries and fatalities. So he has done a marvelous job in making sure his resources are put in the area that makes the most difference to assure that the trucks and the truck drivers are safe out there. And it is paying off. You'll see when we get ways and means, when we get to the performance measures, you'll see some very good indicators there that we've done in that particular division. Turning on to page 10, if I could, then. The other area that division that I think all of you know about is the Highway Division, and I want to introduce Doug Tindall, who is the new administrator of the Highway Division. He's been on the job now for how many days, Doug?
14.
14 days. How many hours and minutes?
Congratulations to Doug.
That's right. Doug is a member who's been a member of the department for 27 years. He knows the department inside and out. I've enjoyed working with him in his other role as state maintenance engineer. I know he's appeared before you many times talking about issues. The Highway Division is our largest division. It's the organization that is responsible for maintenance, preservation, and modernization of the over 8,000 miles of state highway. It does conduct bridge inspections, repairs, upgrades to more than 2,600 state bridges. And what you're going to see over the next 4 years is delivering approximately $2 billion worth of highway projects, which is exactly what the legislature wanted to do. I would point out that Doug is coming into an organization which has undergone a lot of change, most of it at my direction, and from urging from the legislature. We have decentralized our project delivery functions, I think many of you know, so that the people out in the regions have not only the responsibility, but now have the resources and authority to do all of the jobs from cradle to completion. So when somebody makes a decision in Pendleton or Bend, that decision will not be changed by somebody in Salem. The other things that we've done is we've outsourced a major portion of our project delivery work. We used to design about 70% of our highway and bridge projects inside the department, and use 30% of consultants to deliver the rest, and usually only portions of it. We essentially are now utilizing the private sector to deliver 70 to 80% of our construction program, which again is, I think, exactly the direction the legislature gave us in the last session. Mm-hmm. And then finally, I think the other big challenge is just the growth in the construction program in general. Sorry.
Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, may I ask a question on your outsourcing? Mm-hmm. If you've gone from 30% outsourcing to 70 to 80%, how has that affected your FTEs and the number of employees that you had?
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, excellent question. But first off, you have to remember at the same time we went from 30% outsourced to 70 to 80% outsourced, we doubled the size of the construction program. So essentially, the FTEs were flat. The legislature said, we're going to essentially give you the resources to double your construction program, but we're not going to give you any additional FTEs. So what we've done is shifted folks from doing design to essentially now managing contracts. And if you look at the mix of work, that's about the split. Just if you look at the mathematics, that has to be done to be able to double the construction program. You have to actually go from a 30% outside to an 70 to 80% to actually deliver that program with the same resources. if I'm answering your question.
Follow up? I guess it would depend on the nature of the training of the individuals, assuming that they would go from being design engineers to managers, and it would also depend on the size, the number, the frequency, location of the projects as to whether or not the mere size of number of dollars would automatically affect to an equal amount of employees. So, but basically, I'm understanding that there was no change either way in your personnel roster other than just a change in classifications?
Mr. Chair, Representative Richard, that's correct. All the things that you just described are exactly the things that we did. We had to essentially levelize and change project or position descriptions. We had to change duties. We reassigned people out in the field to different places to essentially do just as you described. And I'd be glad to spend a lot of time with you if you understand the changes that we made to essentially accomplish what I think is a major task of doubling our construction program over this, last 2 years.
Okay, just one follow-up then. I've been told that a number of the engineers who were doing design for ODOT are also now consultants for ODOT doing the design work on the private side of this shift. Is that also correct?
Mr. Chair, I represent, that is correct.
Okay, then one follow-up. If we didn't change the FTEs and we merely shifted from design to management, but the design people are also doing design work as consultants, I guess I am confused. I'd love to talk with you further about how that'd be possible.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative, I'd be glad to again go in the numbers. We have actually, if you look at where we are from where we were a couple years ago, there are less people, obviously a lot less people doing design and have been transitioned to managing one or two projects or three or four consultants. So, again, your question is right on. If you want to get into that kind of detail, I think we need to probably spend an hour or so together just to understand how we redeployed and changed the organization to deliver that program. But clearly there is a lot more work for both the private sector, and the work that we're doing inside has been changed dramatically to accommodate that work outside.
Thank you.
Another question.
Moving on.
Okay. Thanks. Go ahead.
Thank you. And I guess the other thing that I would add is that obviously the other thing that Doug is dealing with is that growth in the construction program. And for the committee's benefit, I want to make it clear that the delivery of our construction program, I'm talking about the OTIA 1, 2, and 3, as well as our normal state transportation improvement program, is the priority for the organization. And everybody, all of my managers that you see here today, agree that that is the priority, and we're making sure that is being done to, again, create jobs for Oregon. On page 11, this is a very, very brief summary of how a project gets into the State Transportation Improvement Program. I can't remember which one of you, that was Representative Boone who asked that question. And I think you'll probably want more information than this, Representative, but I think what this chart is meant to show is that projects, the ideas for projects obviously come from citizens, from cities, counties, interest groups out there. Most of the time, those projects are identified through the work at the local government level. So identification of and development of local systems plans at the city or county level is where many of these projects are identified. And clearly, usually when we're talking about a project of interest to somebody, they're talking about a project to modernize or to expand the system or deal with a problem rather than the ongoing maintenance, preservation, or replacement of bridges that are wearing out, as an example. So what this is meant to show you is that essentially we work with all of those folks, the cities, the counties, and then we use our area commissions on transportation to essentially help us identify in particular regions of the state what are the priority projects that we should be focusing some effort on in the next update, or in other words, the next two-year funding cycle of our state transportation improvement program. What you see on this is obviously the commission makes some determinations about how much money is set aside for modernization, for bridges, for pavement rehabilitation, based on pavement conditions and management systems, trying to maintain the assets that we have. But what we do from there is, again, look at those requests, give the area commissions on transportation the understanding of what revenue is available to get to their priorities. They give us their priorities. We go through hearings process. Staff makes a recommendation to our commission, which right now we have done, and out on the street right now is the draft of the 2006 to 2009 State Transportation Improvement Program, where hearings will be starting to be held around the state. And the intent is by about the fall of this year, we will essentially adopt that list. And that is a list that does include the $500 million worth of modernization money that the legislature made available to us through OTIA 3. So, Representative Boone, if I could, that, I think that was a very quick thumbnail sketch of how a project is put into the STIP and moves forward. And if we want more, I'd be glad to spend some time with you also.
No, this is exactly what I thought. This is something I can, if I can use.
Okay, thank you. On the next page, 12, I just wanted to make the committees aware of the area commissions on transportation, where they are located geographically. And you can see that we have a number of acts throughout the state. We have an ODOT person who is essentially the staff liaison. I put their name and number there, so if you have some interest and want to talk about a project in your particular area, that ODOT area manager can tell you, again, where a project is or is not in terms of the queue to get to, but also can give you some of the where the meetings are and opportunities if you want to listen in to the area commissions on transportation. These are groups that are chartered by the Oregon Transportation Commission, advisory to them, and I found them invaluable in terms of helping us select the best projects for particular areas of the state. The next page just shows the maps of where those area commissions are. You can see the names and the location. I would point out that we're still working with Lane County and Region 2 about do we need to have an area commission on transportation there. And then in the Portland metro area, we have the Joint Policy Committee on Transportation, which looks like an area commission on transportation, and it's a federally mandated organization to help divvy up federal dollars, which we have to work, be part of, and agree to. But in that area, we've got areas outside of the Portland metro area in Hood River, in Columbia, and Clackamas County that we don't feel are represented fully. So we're having dialogues with the Portland region on how to get an act set up in those particular two areas. So that's still under construction, is what I would say to this committee. Turning to the next page, this is one I know the Ways and Means folks have dealt with our budget have probably seen before. This is a chart which we call the... I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, do you have a question?
I may interrupt.
Yes, please.
Thank you, Chair Gilman. How did on the area commissions on transportation, how did those line up with economic development and workforce and all the many regions that they have?
Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, or Chair Smith, I guess I would say to you that the boundaries are not consistent, and that's one of the things we've been struggling with. Is we are trying to align our regions with the other groups for economic development purposes or others. Otherwise, well, what I'm finding out is more and more of these organizations are starting to follow up on the Act boundaries, and I think you're going to see over time a closure of all of those various groups into one geographic area that will hopefully simplify things. Because right now there is a number of various organizations and various geographic groups, depending on the affiliation of what they feel is county or city best fits their.
I think this session, that's one of the areas that I'm going to ask our committee to work with you folks and some of the other chairs on is making sure that these different committees are geographically aligned so that way when projects come forward, we're not having to guess who to go talk to in terms of new opportunities or dealing with issues of the day. Chair, if that would be okay, in the coming days, maybe you and I can talk with ODOT and other partners on that.
Sounds great. Okay. I think I'm on page 14, and page 14, as I said, is the bubble chart, it's known as. This is a chart that was developed, I think, over a number of years. I actually worked on it 10 years ago when I was with ODOT, my first go-around as a region manager, working with the then-chair Henry Hewitt, trying to come up with a simple graphical way for people to understand the budget of the Oregon Department of Transportation. I think if you look at this, take a few minutes to study it, it will answer a number of questions. If you look on the left, the top left of this chart, you can see all of the revenues that come into Oregon, actually come into the state for transportation purposes, and you can see that those are all reflected in almost $4 billion worth of transportation dollars coming to the state of Oregon. And if you see the breakdown, we've tried to show you what portion of those are federal, what portion of those are state, and then also have identified for you what portion of those funds are actually general fund. And you can see that the general fund for ODOT is very, or for transportation in Oregon, is very, very small. What I also then wanted to show you is you can see the transfers that under law are given to cities and the counties under the formulas that are outlined in state law. So those monies are taken right off the top, as well as other transfers to other state agencies for services provided to the department and for the state. And then if you see the top right part of that, you can actually see graphically the Oregon Department of Transportation's overall budget for the biennium of 2005-2007 of $2.8 billion. And you can see where the majority of those monies go. You can see the highway division, and then you can also see by division that we just outlined the people stood up in the room. You can see what mix of federal and state dollars go to those various programs. And again, reminding you that those revenues that are derived from the operation and use of motor vehicles in the state of Oregon are dedicated by the Constitution to highway and bridge purposes. So what you'll see is the federal dollars go to those areas where we can't spend those state dollars on it, and the general fund also goes to those programs, again, like rail and like public transit. And if you want to see further where the highway division spends its money, you can actually go to the bottom left of this, and you can actually see in the major funding categories where the department spends the highway revenues. And you can see maintenance. You can see preservation, which is essentially those major reconstruction jobs to make sure the facility lasts. You can see the major dollars going to bridge modernization, and then the other monies that go to the other portions of the program. And then finally, I think always a question is, what about ending balance, and what makes up ending balance when you're done? And you can see the various components of the ending balance there. So this in one page is meant to really kind of give you a basic thumbnail understanding of the department's budget. If you turn to the next page, if you want to understand the definitions, you can actually see what some of those categories and uses of money mean and where the revenues come from. But again, the Ways and Means Committee will be digging into this some more, but this gives you, again, a very quick idea of how the money flows through the department, the cities and counties, and to other service providers. So moving on, am I doing okay here? Okay.
No
right.
Questions.
Yeah. On page 16, I did want to identify for the committee some of the challenges that we deal with in the department and you are going to be dealing with. I think the first one is that the system that we have out there is starting to grow old, and I think the bridges were the first indication of that. Those bridges hit their 50th birthday, and they started to show signs of failure, and we're seeing that throughout the state. Much of the pavements, much of the interstate system was built in the 50s and 60s, and it's fast approaching its useful life. So we need to make major investments just to hold the system together. I would point out that another challenge that my transportation safety and DMV folks would tell you that our Oregon's population is also aging at a rate much greater than the national norms. The baby boomers, of which I'm one, in another few years, will have doubled the number of folks in that age category, and that will have major implications on things like driver and motor vehicle services, public transit, and other things. So those are a couple things. So it's not just the infrastructure that's aging; it's also the people of Oregon are aging. Moving on to page 17, I did want to point out that statewide traffic mobility is a priority and a challenge, and keeping freight and traffic moving during the upcoming unprecedented increase in construction is going to be one of our major challenges, and you will find out that we're doing a lot of new things to manage mobility and make sure that folks can get around and through our construction work. We're doing things that we've never done before, like coordinating with city and county governments, coordinating with other states, making sure that we understand what events are being planned in particular areas so we don't start work on I-5 during the University of Washington Oregon Ducks football game, little things like that. And I think from my perspective, this is probably one of the things that Oregonians will judge us on in terms of how successful we were in delivering the Oregon Transportation Investment Act program, because if they get caught in traffic on a regular basis, they're not going to feel very good about the work that we're doing, no matter whether we're providing jobs for Oregon and providing infrastructure for the future. Going on to page 18, I just wanted to remind the committee that OTIA 1 and OTIA 2 that were passed by the legislature in its regular session in 2001 and then gave us additional bonding authority in 2002, $500 million was made available for projects for modernization, preservation, and bridge work. That $500 million actually leveraged another $172 million, so the original $400 million bonding authority actually turned out to be about $672 million of total projects. Most of them will be done by 2008, and many of them are done now. And when we get into the update, we'll give you that. And that was 162 projects, I believe, is the number that were constructed around the state, and there is projects around all parts of the state. The next page is the other opportunity, which the OTIA 3 package, which was passed by the last session, did provide $2.46 billion, $2.5 billion for roads, highways, and bridges in the state of Oregon. And if you remember right, $1.3 billion of that was dedicated to replace about 340, I think is the number, I'll have to verify that number for you, but about 340 bridges on the state routes, state highway system that are important for freight routes. $300 million were given to local governments for bridges on the city and county system that were important to freight. And cities and counties are going to be receiving about $361 million for maintenance and preservation of their systems over that same 10-year period. And then, as I mentioned, there is another $500 million that was made available through that package by essentially agreeing that we would bond against half of our stream of modernization revenues coming in from state sources and utilize some federal opportunities and financing options to generate another $500 million for modernization. And those are the projects I described. We've made some recommendations to the commission, which they've now put out for public review of how we ought to be spending that money on projects throughout the state of Oregon. On page 20, I just wanted to again remind the committee that we did hear you very, very clearly when you passed the OTIA 3 package. You said that you wanted us to maximize job and contract opportunities for Oregon workers. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Excuse me.
That's right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry to interrupt.
No, that's fine.
I'm not quite clear on the OTIA 3, the $500 million, and what you said about bonding against one half of modernization revenues.
Thank you. I'm glad you covered that very quickly, Mr. Chair, Representative Burley. The majority of the new revenues that were generated by OTIA 3 package, which were increases in titles, registration fees, and various other DMV fees, were focused towards the bridge replacement programs. But we told and suggested to the legislature that if they wanted to start attacking some of the modernization needs, which is what, again, is always the desire of the legislature and other folks, because of the good interest rates, they might want to consider, again, bonding against some of the existing revenues that are coming to the state. Right now, I want to say it's 6 cents, and help me if I've got this right, of the gas tax revenues and associated truck weight mile fees are dedicated and must be spent on modernization of the system. The legislature gave us the authority to essentially bond up to half of that, and essentially to sell about $300 million worth of bonds to attack modernization needs. So the $50 or $52 million a year that used to be coming in for modernization, once we fully sell the bonds and start working on these projects, in 2008 or 2009, the amount of money coming in from that source for new modernization projects will be half of what it is today. Am I answering your question?
That's what I was looking
okay.
for. Thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Everyone.
Yes.
I'm so glad that you are here, because I've had some questions ever since our last session about OTIA 3 and the need for
the $1.3 billion for repair and replacement of state bridges, it was basically explained to us that things were about to fall down. You know, like you said, it's 50 years old and they're coming down, although I mean, it seemed like it was all at once that we were in a desperate shape. And then I noticed that back 2 years ago and again now that the normal budget, I'm looking on page 15, for under highway division consists of following programs. Bridge program, $535 million, work to preserve and ensure safety of 2,600 bridges, tunnels, culverts. And that was also like $500 million in 2003-05 budget. And so my question is, if we're spending $500 million every biennium for bridges and such things, then we needed to immediately bond to save, you know, to keep transit going. So we needed another $1.3 billion under OTIA 3 for bridges. And then I'm looking back on page 14 in the left column where it shows revenues, and it says bonds and COP sales of $803 million. So that's additional debt, I assume, that for the next biennium. Is that correct? The $803 million. Is there a total price, or can you explain to me how come we have already factored $500 million every biennium for bridges, but we needed the other OTIA 3, and now we're going to need additional money as well?
Mr. Chair, Representative Richards, let me see if I can help there. First off, the numbers you're looking at here on these chart are those numbers for the 2005-2007 biennium. So these are the numbers we plan to spend on bridges, for example, in this upcoming biennium. If you look at our historic rates for bridges, it was about $80 to $90 million a year. So this is a dramatic increase over what we've been spending on bridges in the past biennium. So we're probably spending under this scenario about five times what we were 2 years ago for bridges. And it's because of the bonds and the new revenues that were made available by the OTIA program. So that's why you're able to see the funding level come to what the levels you have here today. Okay. So $500 million is substantially more than we spent historically in the past. In terms of the bridges, the overall bridge problem, what we determined 2 years ago in terms of if you were to correct all of the deficient bridges on the Oregon State Highway System right now, it would cost about $4.7 billion. The legislature said we can't come up with revenues to fix all of those, but we're going to want you to essentially repair and replace the bridges on those routes that are critical to Oregon's freight movement. And so what you see is a staging of bridges to make sure that we have the backbones north-south, east-west, as well as the feeder routes that get from the rural areas to those routes so that we can move goods around the state. So the $1.3 billion will be spent over the next about 8 to 9 years, and you'll see increases in our bridge program numbers that are similar to that, but after about year three, you'll start to see them go down as we spend those monies out.
Okay, so clarification. So the $535 million is money that's coming from the OTIA?
Yes, okay. That's correct. The majority of it.
2 years ago, it was about 500, but before that, it was 80 million. So
right.
Okay. Thank you.
Question.
Other person. Yeah.
What would be attributed the increase in cost of doing business to? Is it workers' increase? Is it the cost of supplies?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, I guess I missed the thread of the question here.
When you were talking about the cost in 1 year versus another year, what was that increase? What caused that increase?
Mr. Chair and Senator Carter, the numbers that Representative Richardson was referring to are essentially the monies that are budgeted to be expended. So, again, what I think you're asking is about the unit price and the cost to do an average bridge. Are we seeing increases in that? And the answer is yes. And in the last few months, actually, last year or so, the major component that's risen in cost has been the price of steel.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, and also let me maybe flesh that out a little bit, and correct me if I'm wrong or where I'm wrong here, Bruce. There's a history to this, and it partially goes into the Fram filter old advertisement, you can pay me now or you can pay me a lot later. There was, you know, a great deal of pent-up, unmaintained roads and particularly bridges. Then we passed the gas tax in, when was
when was that? 91? We passed it in 91. That was referred, subsequently defeated. A great deal of that revenue that was to be produced from the gas tax was going to be dedicated to bridge repair, infrastructure repair. That money never got put into those infrastructure projects. So we were trying to play catch up awfully fast, and I think that's where the urgency, indeed emergency, for the bonding package, which I don't think anyone was particularly happy about, came. That absolutely crucial infrastructure repair. Happily, some of it has not been as bad as was anticipated. So there's actually some bright news in that whole thing. But there's a history to this, exponentially. Will you speak for me, please?
Meteoric
increase in bridge repairs that was absolutely needed and vastly critical to the transportation infrastructure of the state. It's a pretty complicated situation, but again, very simply, it goes back to the old Fram filter commercial.
You ought to sit by the senator more often. She may be a good help to you.
Hey, he's always good help to me.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Westland, I agree with you. And to refresh some of the memory of folks, remember we had an economic analysis done, and the concern was not with bridges falling down. The concern was with our ability to maintain legal truckloads on those bridges. What we found is if we were forced to reduce truckloads on the bridges, which is essentially the option to rebuilding those bridges, that the long-term economic impact to the state was in the order of $88 billion lost over the next 20 years and about 120,000 lost job opportunity for lost jobs in the state. And I believe there was that got people's attention when he understood that without having a bridge system that was able to carry legal loads, it would have dire economic consequences for the state of Oregon and would actually drive some businesses probably out of this state into the neighboring states. And so that was one of the reasons we moved forward on those critical bridges. But this does not address all the problem. But again, what we're going to be doing is, again, bringing those bridges up to a legal load carrying capacity, and will hopefully service the state for many, many decades in the future.
Senator, yeah, and it's. I agree. It wasn't that the bridges were going to fall down, but it was the safety ratings and the rerouting of the I-5 traffic through Representative Burley's, Gilman's, and my district that, through downtown Redmond on two-way streets that had a good many of us, as well as the state itself, very concerned. So.
Moving on, Mr. Chair. No, I'm sorry.
If I remember correctly, wasn't it also a preferential time for the state of Oregon to be structuring these type of deals in terms of the rates and terms of the borrowings, in terms of the cost of funds?
Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, most definitely. The 9/11 terrorist attack drove the economy downward, and obviously interest rates went down, and historic lows in terms of interest rates. So our ability to sell bonds at reasonable rates was greatly enhanced. In fact, the reason we went from $400 million in 2001 to $500 million in the 2002 special session is because interest rates had gone down so much that we were able to essentially borrow another $100 million worth of revenue for the same, $100 million worth of more principal, essentially a loan, for the same amount of revenues that we would have done under the $400 million. So
pay more now or pay even more.
and I think the other thing is, obviously, these are investments that if we do them properly will last 75 to 100 years. Will last much longer than the bonds, and hopefully we'll have the bonds paid off 15, 20, 25 years, whatever we actually end up selling the term for. And also, right now, inflation has been low, so this is the kind of time that you want to use bonding to the advantage of the state to deal with issues. And besides that, we wanted to create some jobs, which was the other.
And we can quote you on that for the last 100 years.
What was that again? Yes, you can quote me on that. In the hip textbook, right?
The grandkids will remember.
Right. Good. Moving on, I think I was on the very last page, and I was just trying to wrap up here a bit. That, it wasn't the last page. I was just talking about on page 20 is where I was. I was attempting to let you know that I very much got the message from the last legislative session as we move forward with the replacement of $1.3 billion worth of bridges. It was the expectation of the legislature that we maximize job and contract opportunities for Oregon workers and companies, and that we improved and increased our utilization in women and minority firms and workers in the work that we do. And I think many of you know we're working hard on that. You also directed that we use a private sector program management firm, which we have done. They've been on board now for about 9 months. And the major portion of the work is going to be coming through them starting in the next few weeks. So the next few construction seasons are going to be some of the busiest there have been in the state. And then finally, as I mentioned earlier, the biggest thing that you wanted to do, as I said, as we move forward with this, you want to make sure commerce is able to move throughout the state of Oregon. The next page, Road User Fee Task Force.
One question, Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me.
Sorry. Is that an Oregon management firm?
Mr. Chair and Senator Carter, this is a firm that has Oregon offices, but it's a firm that actually is outside of headquarters outside of Oregon. But the reason they were selected is because they told us they were essentially going to do very little staffing up here in Oregon, and essentially be doing outsourcing all of the design work to essentially assure that we meet this budget note.
And how closely do you monitor that?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, that's one of the things we're going to be monitoring very closely, because you have made it clear that you want to see reports back from us on a regular basis about how we're doing. So you will know exactly where we are now.
And to the incoming chair, Mr. Smith, Representative Smith, that's one of the things we've been very clear on the last time. We hate to see companies coming in, bringing in all their workers, Oregonians paying the taxes, and getting no results. So that's one of the things that... Bruce has said that he'd keep us up to date on, and I'd like for us to hold his feet to the fire on that one.
Well taken, and we will.
I'll try to get through this. I think we have another important item to get to. On page 21, I just wanted to let you know that the Road User Fee Task Force, which was authorized by the legislature in 2001, where we were looking at alternatives to the fuel tax, because we were starting to worry that as more hybrid vehicles penetrated the market, you can see with the price of gasoline, that more and more electric, hybrid, ethanol, biodiesel-type vehicles are coming on the market. We need to make sure that we have a viable way to pay for transportation in the future. We are going to have a pilot going on this fall in Eugene, where essentially a fleet of vehicles, cars, will be paying a vehicle-mile travel tax instead of a gas tax at the pumps. Very interesting. If you want some information on that, I'd be glad to come back. And, again, I just want to remind you that we only have legislative authority to do a pilot and nothing more. So we're just learning from this work, and obviously can't put it in a full-scale way. Page 22, the Oregon Innovative Partnerships Program. The legislature last year created the Oregon Innovative Partnerships Program essentially to see if we could do things like was done for the extension of MAX light rail from Gateway to the airport, where essentially a private sector firm came in, not only designed and built the facility, but funded, designed, and built the facility in exchange for lease revenues on property owned by the Port of Portland. We want to see if those are the same kind of things that could be employed on highway projects or other transportation projects around the state of Oregon. And we are going to our commission tomorrow with authorization to actually request proposals on a number of projects throughout the state of Oregon.
Representative Bruce. Mr. Chairman, thank you. Bruce, any idea yet? I know it's kind of early. How successful that partnership with Bechtel's been?
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, you're referring to the airport MAX?
The light rail extension, yeah. Yes.
Well, I guess from the standpoint of the public, it was very successful. We have a new transit link to the airport, providing an option for people to get to the airport. I'm not sure that Bethel, if they were here, would say that they've done what they really wanted to do in terms of the lease revenues from the land up there, because, again, that was, I think we opened the day before the 9/11 terrorist attack, and I think there was a depressed market in around that area. And so I'm hoping they're looking at it from a long-term standpoint, and we'll probably feel better about it in a number of years.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I commend you for moving this OIP program forward. I'm not sure about the acronym, but I guess looking at the projects that were on that, mm-hmm. I just wanted to make sure that where there is an overlap between the projects that you're bringing forward to the commission to be part of the public-private partnership, at least potentially, mm-hmm. where there's an overlap between those and the projects of statewide significance, there are some that are on both sure. lists. Am I correct in assuming that just because it's on this public-private partnership list, potentially, it doesn't remove it at all from the projects of statewide significance and as a potential funding source from that pool of money?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hutt, you are correct. The projects, some of the projects that we're going to be soliciting are projects of statewide significance, major, large projects. And I think the important thing is it's a partnership. I mean, we can't expect the private sector to pay 100% of these projects, but I suspect they'll be coming back with a proposal that says how we could share and how we could come up with revenues to do that. And clearly, I think if you look at this, I've actually made the recommendation. We set aside $20 million of that $500 million as seed money to essentially encourage folks to essentially make proposals on certain of those projects of statewide significance. So they will remain on both lists.
Great. Thank you.
Last couple things for you. I think you should be aware that I think you saw in the bubble chart we get a lot of money from the federal government. On a percentage-wise, it's down. Every 6 years, the federal government, Congress, authorizes what amount of money they think that they will spend on transportation in the next 6 years. They outline what the priorities are for the nation. We continue to work with them to essentially make sure that we get our fair share of the federal revenues. And right now, we get back about 95 cents on every dollar that we pay. We want to see that continue. We'd like to see the amount of money from the federal government come up. Obviously, there's a lot of debate, and there has been for almost a year and a half now about the funding level, and we're hoping this spring they'll be able to actually tell us what amount of money we can count on in the next six years. I'm not confident that they will have closure here in the next few weeks, but we'd like to have them come up with a proposal that meets some of the guidelines that we've suggested here. Page 24, Connect Oregon. I won't get into that because I think we're going to, Chris Warner and I are going to talk about that next, but in summary, on page 25, again, just to reiterate, safety is our number one priority for our workers and for the traveling public. The delivery of our projects to meet your expectations is our highest priority. We want them to...
You've got to be kidding me.
Fire alarm.
Fire alarm?
Under break.
How's it called?
Meeting. I'm sorry we didn't adjourn. I neglected to do that when we left, but
we stayed here at our risk.
And we're going to talk about Connect Oregon, and we're going to have the Warner Brothers. Bruce, I don't know. Are you starting, or Chris? Are you starting?
Okay,
Chris.
Chair Smith and Gilman, members of the committee, for the record, I am Chris Warner. I am the governor's legislative director and also his transportation policy advisor. We welcome the opportunity to talk to you a little bit about this, what the governor sees as a very important piece of legislation, and thank you for inquiring about it so early in the session. That's very important. As you know, getting the economy moving has been kind of the hallmark of the administration, and we're focusing on jobs and the many critical transportation needs before us. The governor believes that a viable and diverse transportation system is critical to our economy and our economic recovery. Oregon has initiated three major transportation programs in the past few years with the OTIA 1, 2, and 3 projects, and that's resulted in about a $2.96 billion investment in projects to improve our roads and bridges in the state. These funds have also included monies for the cities and counties, which is very important because, as we'll talk about, a system of state highways and county roads and city streets are very important for the economy. And we also recognize, the governor also recognizes that other investments need to be made. And that's one of the reasons we're here today, is to talk about Connect Oregon. And certainly I want to compliment many members on this panel, Representative Beyer and others, who worked very hard on these last OTIA projects. Without your critical leadership, we could not have gotten to where we are now. And we really believe that there's more work to be done. In recognizing these investments, we really think it's time to take a look at some of the other transportation needs that we have, our rail, our marine, our air, our transit systems, and that we want to ensure that an entire system as a whole is strong, diverse, and efficient. We like to kind of talk about the fact that it's a system, and if all the pieces of the system aren't strong, then the transportation system itself is at risk, and we don't want to do anything to jeopardize the significant investments we've already made. Connect Oregon, which is embodied in Senate Bill 71, has been introduced, and Director Warner will talk about the specifics of the bill. I'd like to give you, you know, a few more brief thoughts on why the governor feels that this investment makes sense now for Oregon's economy. As you know, we are extremely limited in the uses that we have for our highway dollars and the monies collected through the gas tax. With that limitation, we think it's necessary to take a look at other forms of funding to make these critical investments. By using $100 million in lottery-backed bonds to invest in Connect Oregon, we feel we can truly have an economic spark for our air, our rail, our transit, and our marine infrastructure. It will help the health of the entire system, and that really does include the roads and the bridges. By not being overly dependent on one mode of transportation, we can keep all of the sectors that connect our distribution points and take advantage of the most efficient and cost-effective systems for transporting products. A variety of choices also maintains competition for transportation costs. I'd like to give you a quick sense of how we think that these investments will help jumpstart the economy. Certainly the construction jobs, the transportation savings, and the business recruitment and retention are very important aspects as we grow and recruit new businesses in Oregon. So this is not just talking about construction jobs. These are talking about retaining jobs, but also providing better transportation logistics for our global competitiveness, and by increasing the delivery times and ensuring that our highway investments are not choked by the congestion of inadequate funding for the other parts of our transportation system. We're also very aware of kind of the population growth and the trends that we have, especially on the West Coast, that more people are coming to Oregon. The amount of freight, we've seen studies that say it could nearly double between 2000 and 2020. That's a pretty staggering number, a doubling of our freight from 2000 to 2020. Even with the investments we've made in our roads and highways, we are still very much in need of some kind of critical investments. Also, I think that the transportation system investment now will improve the prospects for the industries that we have in Oregon now, whether it's forest products, agriculture, software, food processing, sports apparel, transportation equipment. All of those things are dependent on having a healthy and diverse transportation system. By also investing now, I think we'll be able to take advantage of some additional funding by taking the state money and attracting both public and private dollars for marine, rail, aviation investments throughout the state, as well as the associated business investments in the industrial properties and business facilities. So by taking the state money now and matching with those money, we'll actually enhance the dollars we have. And by making these investments now, we'll also reduce shipping costs, which we think are critically important for businesses.
And then one other thing that the governor's emphasized in his first 2 years was dealing with industrial lands and the entire issue of industrial lands. When we talk about certification and project-ready lands, one of the things that the people ask about is do you have a robust and a balanced transportation system? And they ask about roads and highways, definitely, but they also want to know about rail, about air facilities, and also about marine, because those are important components as we get these industrial lands together to actually have a kind of a market and a portfolio of lands that can attract both diverse and also a sustainable industry. So investing now would also help maximize our region's natural transportation advantages. We have two Class 1 railroads in the state. We have interstate highways. We have an international seaport, plus a seaport in Coos Bay, and up and along the coast and along the Columbia. So we've got many ports, and we have also Portland International Airport that has international service. Further investing in this transportation network will enhance our position and our opportunities to have what we talk about, kind of a nimble and efficient transportation system. And also, part of this is also to increase our global reach. We have, we've done very well with the Portland International Airport in terms of international service. We see other opportunities that we have. Agricultural products from all over Oregon flow through our Oregon ports and our seaways. So by increasing that market reach, we'll be able to help our farmers and also all the other industries in Oregon. And we're also, I think, and this is very important, to help kind of preserve the investment we've made. I think I've talked about that. We've made these critical investments in our roads and bridges, and it's critical that we protect those by also investing in our other modes. And also the multiplier effect. We do have a federal reauthorization of was ICE-T and T-LU or T-21. There's all the different T's. We might have an opportunity with that being reauthorized to use some of our state monies to be part of that match. And I think that would be very important because I think that the highway bill does have something besides just highway. There are other modes of transportation as part of that. And anything we can do to try to generate more jobs and income is critically important. And we've also found, especially with some of the aviation projects, this federal match is very significant. So at times it can be 19-1 or so in terms of match. So very small amounts of state money can actually go a really long ways when we match with the federal dollars. Summary, I just wanted to thank you for this opportunity to bring forward this. We talk a lot about this being about transportation, but in our mind, it's also about jobs. It's also about making sure that businesses have the opportunity, if they wish, as they work with our state agencies and our local partners, to actually get the economy rolling again and working with businesses and our local governments. We just think it makes good sense for Oregon at this point. So what I'd like to do is turn it over to Director Warner, and he can discuss kind of the specifics of the bill, and then I think we'll answer any questions you might have.
May I jump in?
Absolutely.
For just a minute before?
Sure.
Chris, tell me a little bit about the origin of this bill. Did it just come out of the governor's office, or were the stakeholders invited in to talk about it?
I think the governor actually has been talking about the multimodal bill for a very long time. I think over the summer we were still the hardest issue with it is, and in many ways, was to make it part of the budget. So that's kind of what we were working on, kind of the schematic of making sure that we had something that was going to fit within the confines of a very tight budget. And so I think this is kind of our first cut at it. We're more than willing. We've talked to many folks about kind of what their needs are. In many ways, and I think Director Warner will talk about this, we want to kind of continue the momentum from the last legislative session and the work we did. For example, there was some $8 million for some of the highway spurs. And so this was kind of a natural outcropping of that because we have made some pretty significant investments all over the state. Director Warner will talk about that. So, we've talked to folks and we've been, kind of shopping it around. It's one of those things where our office initiated the conversation with ODOT to try to see, if number one, if it was possible, because this is a pretty high hill to climb, especially in these budget times, but also kind of what the pieces would be. So, yeah, this is a good start, and we'd love to kind of talk to you about what the where to go.
Any further questions, Representative?
Thank you, Chair Gilman. When you talk about marine navigation, I assume you're also talking about river navigation on the Columbia River?
Chair Smith, I think one of the things, and I think we can talk about in terms of what we're looking at the bill, we are looking at capital investment within what we're doing, and so something that basically outlives the life of the bonds. So yes, I think river navigation is definitely part of, and the marine facilities in connection with marine traffic, I think, is what we're talking about.
What I'm struggling with is, and I really want to keep our tone positive, because I think this is a project that truly is worth investigating. But I'm struggling with, how do we balance $100 million of investment in infrastructure, which would include marine, while knowing at the same time we perhaps could be entering litigation on our river system that would prohibit transportation of cargo down the river? I'm struggling with that.
Chair Smith, and that's certainly something that we can have as part of the discussion. And I know that there are many issues and probably people better than I can to talk in terms about river health and those kind of issues, but I'd be willing to explore that, because it's something we need to explore.
Yeah, well, just please know that's a concern of mine.
I will.
Other questions? Yes, Representative Zott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would also affirm, I think all of us on both sides of these committees would share the desire to spend money investing in things that are going to improve great mobility, be good for business, be good for jobs, far better return on the dollar than litigation or all kinds of other ways we can spend state dollars. I really want to commend the governor for this package. I was actually disappointed in the media coverage when the governor's budget came out, because there was no talk about Connect Oregon at all. It seemed like a great opportunity to celebrate one of the really positive things in this budget, and I just fully support the need to make these investments. If anything, I think you can make the case, and we probably all should be talking about the fact that $100 million is really not what we need. We could use, $500 million in rail and marine investments, but this is a huge, huge step in the right direction.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Yes. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The reference is to include people in this system.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a sense of the distribution between public transit, I assume, and freight type issues?
I can get that.
Senator Morris, I think Director Warren will talk about kind of the specifics of the bill and kind of lay that out. If we want to go ahead and handle that right now, if that would.
Okay, I think that's all the questions. I'm going to have to apologize. I need to go talk to Senator Farioli about navigability. So. Vice Chair Burley will take over from here. Thanks.
Mr. Vice Chair, Senator Morris, if I could, could I move into the next part of the presentation? I think I can answer that as I go through there. If I'm not, you'll let me know, I'm sure, okay? But is that acceptable? Please. Okay, thank you. Again, thank you, Chris. I think you did a great job of identifying why this program is important to the state of Oregon for economy and for jobs and our economic competitiveness in the world market. I think one of the things that is always of interest to folks like you is, all right, how is this proposal actually going to work, and how will decisions be made on which projects to be funded out of this $100 million? And you should have some testimony from me dated today that goes through what I'm going to describe here in a moment. I do want to commend John Hauser, your committee administrator. I think he did a good analysis of the bill and raised many issues that again, we'll try to make sure are clear for you. Again, as Chris mentioned, $100 million of lottery-backed bonds, and I think it's important to note, again, this is to deal with non-highway types of capital investments, specifically looking at airports, marine, public transit, and rail. And the way the system and process is to work, as outlined in the bill, is to essentially have the Oregon Transportation Commission select projects in consultation with the other state agencies who are involved here and the other stakeholder groups, specifically in the departments of aviation and for aviation-type projects and economic and community development for those projects that deal with ports, since most of those ports are an economic development engine for those particular areas. In my memo, I tried to outline for you, again, some of the important things that could be done on the aviation side in terms of connecting rural airports to the larger cities and in the larger cities to, again, the national and international markets. And there's just a lot of things that those rural communities rely on and having a strong airport network. On the marine side, clearly you all know the importance of marine transport for the economy, both import and export in Northwest. And what I wanted to point out for you is 1,000 businesses in Oregon and Washington use those facilities every year. In terms of public transportation, I'm getting to your question, Senator, is that obviously there's a portion of these monies that could be used for, again, capital improvements on the transit side. And I think one of the things we're looking at is ways that we can help eliminate some of the commuter traffic from some of the most important freight routes that we have, that and, again, try to reduce congestion and improve air quality in those areas. And on rail, I think we know the importance of rail, and I attached a map of some investments, which I'll describe in a moment. We have two of the large intercontinental railroads, Union Pacific and Burlington Northern Santa Fe, as well as 20 short-line railroads that are very, very important. So in terms of priority and funding, first off, the intent of the bill is to give priority to the projects which transfer people or freight between or among the various modes that are identified in the bill. But the big thing is, number two, to improve mobility or travel conditions on two or more modes simultaneously, i.e. the Connect Oregon. So connect the modes, and I think if you talk to many shippers and businesses, you'll find out that they rely on more than one mode of transportation to get their goods, raw products into their firms and again, get the finished products to market. In terms of the percentages, the law is drafted to say that no more than 25% of the total money can be spent on any one project, so it can't take all of the money and put it on one large project, and that the fund, these monies will pay for no more than 80% of the project cost. So essentially we're looking at, again, other public or private participation as a matching requirement to, again, stretch those dollars further. And I think in answer to your question, Senator Morris, at least 10% of the money available will be allocated to each mode. So for aviation, for rail, for maritime, and public transportation, each one of those would get a minimum allocation of essentially $10 million. But that means 60% of that can be, again, put on all the other modes. And the intent is to use some of the guiding criteria in this law to select the appropriate projects. And if you go down, we expect to utilize existing advisory committees on public transit and create a new one on rail, which would advise us not only on passenger rail, because we have one of those now, but we'd like to have a group that actually looks at rail from both freight and passenger, because you can't escape the interaction between those two. And then finally, we'll use the Aviation Commission and the Economic Development Commission, as well as all the other stakeholder groups, to identify and vet projects. And what we're going to ask that they do when they submit projects for consideration is that essentially they're going to be looking at whether the proposed transportation project results in an economic benefit to the state, which is what I think we're really trying to accomplish with this bill, whether the project will require an ongoing commitment of resources from the state. So in other words, is there going to be an ongoing drain in terms of revenues for operations and maintenance? We need to know that. And how much of the cost can be borne of the project can be borne by the applicants or sponsors of the project. For example, if we're dealing with a project with the railroad, clearly that's a public-private partnership where we would expect a significant contribution from the railroad to step up to take advantage of these monies. And then we're also asking if people cannot provide more than 20%, is there a reason for that? In other words, is there economic distress, and is there reasons that we ought to look at selecting a project where the match is a minimum of 20%? And then finally, one which is not in the bill, but that number 5 on my second page says we want people to look at whether the project is ready for implementation so that we can see the economic benefit to the state. And there is a sunset clause on this bill, so the intent is to get the project selected, funded, and the money out the door before January of 2008. So in my last page on this, I want to make it clear that if this package is endorsed by the legislature, the OTC will work with all of the stakeholder groups, the advisory committees, and the aviation and economic development departments to essentially define criteria and define a process for solicitation for projects. The law says that any person or public body may propose a project. It would be our intent to then vet those through the various boards and commissions, use our area commissions on transportation, which I described earlier, use our freight advisory committee, which is a committee that's established in law by the legislature, and again, the metropolitan planning organizations to come up with recommendations for the commission. And if we do this properly, we believe projects could be selected and ready for funding in March of 2006, and this would allow an adequate time for projects to be developed, vetted, and reviewed by all. So again, in summary, I think this is a great opportunity and start, I guess is what I would say, to deal with the needs for the other modes of transportation, and will help position Oregon for the future. And in terms of the selection process, I just wanted to point out that you have in front of you a map, which Chris Warner referred to, which is a map which shows the investments that were made with $8 million of short line improvement and rail spur monies made available by the last legislature in House Bill 3446. We just selected these projects. This is an example of how we worked with the stakeholder groups to identify projects, look at the criteria for economic benefit. And again, you can see there's a very good spread throughout the state of Oregon. And this is, I think there were about four times more requests than there were funding. There were many valid projects, but these are the kind of things we'd like to get to on the rail side, and an example of how the process would work to select projects. So I would stop there, Mr. Vice Chair, and see if there's questions for either of us.
Thank you. Any questions? No questions? Wow. Great. That was short and sweet. Well, I want to thank you both for taking the time to come here today. I found it very helpful and informative. And yeah. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And with that, if there's no objections, we'll adjourn.